I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Healthy Mind Matters, where we discuss the important community issues of stronger mental health, emotional wellness, and the growing problem of addiction. Healthy Mind Matters is brought to you by Intermountain Healthcare and Select Health. Here's our host, Maria Chaleos, on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thanks for joining us for Healthy Mind Matters. Today we are talking about suicide prevention and the role that families, parents play, and the community. I have with me today the manager of Behavioral Health Crisis and Stabilization Therapy at Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital, Robert Loftus, and Jessica Curtis, who is a clinical social worker at Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital. Let's talk about, Jessica, some of the therapies that are available for parents once they do decide that there is a problem and they probably should do something about it. What kinds of things can you really offer to families?
Yeah, so there's a lot of community support that they can do, specific therapy modalities such as CBT or DBT, strengths-based, things like that that can really be helpful for people who are struggling with suicidal thoughts. Specifically in the emergency department, we complete safety plans with the kids who are going to be transitioning back home or to a lower level of care. And along with that, we like to do what we call is a feelings thermometer.
So tell us about that.
Okay, so with the feelings thermometer, it's an activity. So when they are calm in the emergency department and they're able to think through situations that they've maybe been through in the past or currently, we like to write it down with them. And so we will do a scale from 1 to 10. And on the 1, we want them to think about a situation that they were happy in. And so something that brought them joy, happiness. Some examples I've heard are a family vacation or spending time with their best friends or things of that nature. And then we like to move up in the thermometer's numbers. And so then we'll have them identify a 5, so right there in the middle. So maybe it's not something that has caused them great distress, but it's not their happy place either. So maybe it is something that's just a typical day activity. So doing chores around the house or going to work, maybe something like that. And then we like to go to the top and say, when you came into the emergency department today, were you at a 10? And or if you weren't, what number were you at? And we'll write down what happened to have them come into the emergency department and put that at the number that they identify. And then we like them to just circle a number where if they feel like they need help, what number is that? So maybe for some kids, it's a 4. And maybe some kids can get all the way up to a 9 or 10. And then we'll share that number with their family with the safety plan. So they could say in the moment, Mom or Dad, I'm at a 9. And families know what that means. And they are able to help support their child in that moment.
Right. So first identifying exactly what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then what kinds of skills do you try to implement once we get to that point?
Yeah, we always want them having positive coping skills that can help them in a situation like that. And so we like them to think about coping skills that they can use immediately in the moment, and then coping skills that they could use maybe after things have calmed down. There's some things, lots of kids have a lot of activities such as reading, writing, sports, music, and those are great coping skills, but they can't always be used immediately in any situation. So we like to help them think of one or two that they could use no matter where they are that can help them to help calm down or steady their breathing or things like that.
So I'm trying to imagine my feelings as a parent in this situation, and I'm very reactionary. I've had to really learn to not say what I'm thinking a lot of times. So I'm imagining that you still have to do all of these same things with the parents. They still have to deal with their emotions and learn skills to better handle how they react to situations. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we always want parents on board with our plan and with our safety plan because we can't work effectively with these kids without working with their families. It's a whole systems approach. And so we want the family support system, parents, whoever it may be, to also feel secure and knowledgeable about the plan moving forward.
Okay, well, go ahead, Brian.
And I think one way we try and help reassure parents is to, you know, first of all, do what Jessica's describing are these kinds of interventions, but we also want them to know that they have resources at their disposal that they can turn to and ask questions like you're asking and be able to get some answers so that they don't have to be in a state of panic themselves, because I can imagine feeling that your child is about to attempt suicide is incredibly stressful. That goes without saying. But what we want is for parents to feel empowered to be able to get the right help at the right time. And so, you know, there are lots of options out there for that.
Right. And again, you would hope that they would turn to their primary care physician first if they're not in a crisis situation.
Correct. And then many children, you know, might need cognitive behavioral therapy or some form of brief therapy. And it's about how do you find a therapist? How do you do that? And, you know, we certainly can talk about that.
Okay. Well, how do they? Yeah. How do they find a therapist? Because I've understood that the waiting lists have been pretty long to get into some of these therapists. Is that still the case?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great point. Yes. Many, many therapists do have waiting lists. Many clinics have waiting lists. I think, first of all, it's about not being intimidated by that. Go ahead and get on the waiting list. I mean, there are things you can do in the interim as well, which we can talk about. But many people, I think one thing to maybe identify not while you're not in a crisis is what your own insurance coverage is. I think the world of mental health care is incredibly complex, and many of the insurance arrangements are different than the medical side of the insurance arrangements. And so we encourage families to turn their insurance card over and call that number on the back and say, hey, what are my options if I wanted to access mental health therapy? And usually when you're not in a crisis, there'll be someone there that can help you know, hey, this is a list. These are people you can call, and you can, you know, go down that list and be able to find somebody, hopefully, that would be accessible. And we encourage families to, you know, if somebody's not working for you, that doesn't mean they're not a good therapist. It just means they might not be a good fit. So keep trying.
Right. You're shaking your head, Jessica.
Yeah. The community-based support is really powerful. And that's where they do a lot of the real work through their depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. In the emergency department, it's a lot of crisis stabilization. We don't have a lot of time to sit and do any kind of real therapeutic modalities. And so if they're able to be stable in the community, then we want them there doing that really great work with their outpatient therapist.
What do you hope parents will do in their homes to reduce the risk of something tragic happening? How can they prevent a death by suicide? Robert?
Yeah, well, one of the main things that we say are lethal means. We don't want children to have access to lethal means.
So lock up your guns.
Correct. And then also, I think many teens, they may have indicated, hey, this is a vulnerable spot for me. I'm thinking about overdosing. So, you know, maybe locking up medications or you know, having them out in a way that's that people can take them, but not having, you know, large amounts of pills and things like that available. I think
that's such an important point, because I think about it whenever I go to Costco and I buy the daytime cold or the nighttime cold, and they come in these huge amounts, and I don't think we're really aware of what we really have in our, you know, in our cabinets that really could be harmful.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, I think the other thing is that, you know, if someone reaches the point in their suicidal thinking that they're in a full-blown crisis, often they will start planning and thinking about things. And the internet, of course, is a great thing, but it's also a place where you can look up a lot of details about, oh, hey, this is how I might do it. And so, unfortunately, we see that sometimes, and that's why we want to restrict access to lethal means, so that if a teen is to that point in thinking about those things, we want to be able to not have them have access.
Yeah,
to.
Definitely an important thing to think about, though, when you are stocking up your medicine cabinet.
Right.
Maybe those things should be in a different place.
Right.
But I do find that kids can find things anywhere. They are very, very good at watching their parents' behavior and finding things.
I think we see that a lot, where we'll ask the parents something about a gun or other lethal means, and they'll say, oh, we have one, but it's locked up and they don't know where it is. And you ask the child the same question and they know exactly where it is or exactly how to access. So you're right. Our kids know a lot more than we think.
Right.
They
we
do.
We need to really think it through, don't we? Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back on Healthy Mind Matters on KSL News Radio.